On today's Next Fan Up podcast, you'll hear this.
You can't turn on something about the Super Bowl. I mean, Peyton Manning has really kind of been like a pity party.
You'll hear this.
Do we have time to get into whether or not the NFL is actually recording PSIs during football games?
Oh, hell no.
That's a whole other podcast.
You don't want to do that?
No. But you won't hear this.
Go Pats! You're supposed to say, let's get the podcast started right now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Super Fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Super Bowl edition, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, everybody. I am Pod Vader. I am here with four super fans to help you preview the game, but we've got more than just super fans on this show. As you know, by reading the description of our podcast, you can download and subscribe to Next Fan Up on iTunes if you're listening to this via my Twitter feed, which I know a lot of you are, or you're listening to this from blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. Because those are the places where you can get this podcast. So please download, subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, listen, and enjoy. With all that out of the way, let me introduce to you the four guys that are going to help me run through today's show. And we're going to start with Patrick, who is our Patriots superfan. Patrick, are you, have you gotten over the loss from 2 weeks ago?
Shockingly quickly, along with most of New England. I think it was just, we knew we were running on fumes all season, and, you know, especially the last half dozen games. And even if frankly, I expected to just roll over Denver. I don't know why I did, but I did. Even if we got beyond that point, I thought we were just going to get throttled by Carolina in the Super Bowl. So it really, it's not like 2007 where it's a gut punch loss. It's more of like we weren't the best team in the league, so I don't care if we're going to the Super Bowl.
And winning last year certainly softened the blow. And speaking of winning last year, the loser of last year was the Seahawks, and that team is represented by Justin. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Pod. Thanks for just immediately starting with that knife there. I appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for, is to hand out knives. And as I continue to pass them out, I bring in Greg, who is the Steelers super fan. It hasn't been that long for you, Greg, since your team was in the Super Bowl.
No, 5 years isn't so bad. How you doing today, Pod?
I'm doing well. And I think he figured out why he was saved for last. It is Andrew, our Jets super fan. I think it was number three. Is that the last time we've seen the Jets in the Super Bowl?
I don't know, Pod. I'm just shocked that even though Patrick was the last one to join us on the show today, before we started recording, that you started to start with the Patriots and relive last week's loss, even though it's actually been 2 weeks since the evil empire was stopped by Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos.
Well, it's the 50th anniversary celebration, AJ, so he's going in descending order of relevancy.
Well, it did fit the narrative of setting up, you know, when each team was last in the Super Bowl. All right. All jokes aside, all of these guys here have been great. Justin is one of our newest super fans, so we're glad to have him on board representing the Seahawks. You can tweet us, podcast. We've got lots of conversations going on right now, not just about the Super Bowl, but also getting ready for the NFL draft and the NFL offseason. You can check us out on Facebook. We don't have a lot going on there right now, and I don't believe Jimmy has written up a preview for the Super Bowl. Probably won't, but you can get the podcast there. Our Facebook group is Next Fan Up. Or you can go to facebook.com/NFU podcast. And of course, email. We love email. We have one man named Josh, who's a big fan of Monty's because they shared the same team allegiance, that being the Raiders. And Josh has written us in. You can send those emails to nextfanup@gmail.com. nextfanup@gmail.com. We got a lot to get to here, gentlemen. This is our Super Bowl preview bash. Blow out the budget. Didn't really blow out the budget. But let's get all started here with our super fan super battle. And once again, we brought in a special guest to represent the Denver Broncos. That is Brandon Lee from Her Fantasy Football and Jimmy Six, who's been with us for quite some time as our Carolina Panthers super fan. Here we go. It is the biggest battle of the super fans that we have done ever on this podcast because, one, this is our first season, and two, it is the Super Bowl. And for the Super Bowl, our Panthers super fan, Jimmy Six, is with us. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, what's going on? Keep pounding, everybody. One more game.
And once again, representing the Denver Broncos, we bring in a special guest. This time it is Brandon Lee from Her Fantasy Football, all three sisters of the Her Fantasy Football podcast, big fans of the Denver Broncos. Hi, Brandon. You're not supposed to be here.
Ha 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 ha, but I am. Defense wins championships.
Oh, how dare you. That, oh gosh, hurts me. Let's start with you, Brandon, and talk about how you're not supposed to be here. We were talking a little bit right before we started the recording. The talk right now is that Peyton Manning doesn't have a chance. The Broncos, they don't have a chance. And that was the talk 2 weeks ago too. So that's got to make you feel a little special right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I remember I'm a very pessimistic fan. I always think we're going to lose, like, you know, up until the last second, I think we're going to lose. I was convinced the Patriots were going to win. I mean, I just, you know, whatever. But I prefer every single time being an underdog, and especially when you're a team that relies on your defense. You know, that's where you want to be. And this is the first time in Peyton Manning's career that he's had to play like that, where he has to be more conservative. What I like going forward is that I don't want to say he was humbled by his time on the bench, but I think that there was a wake-up call for everyone involved that just the game has changed with the way that he can play it. So we need to adjust, and he cannot be slinging it around because all he has to do is just not turn over the ball. When he doesn't turn over the ball, we win. End stop. Yeah, I mean, that's just that is how we play football. So I feel a lot better about going in the underdog. And you know, especially since Carolina has been kind of rocking the whole no one believes in us thing. Now that people do believe in them, whoopsies.
You know, it's funny. I don't think I've ever really heard of Peyton Manning as being a gunslinger like a Brett Favre type. But I guess this year he kind of was just throwing it up there out of desperation.
The thing that actually frustrates me the most about Peyton Manning, he never throws it out of bounds. Watch him. It's unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. He always throws it in bounds. It drives me nuts. Same with Eli.
That's very interesting. Now, Jimmy, your quarterback, Cam Newton, he's now in his first Super Bowl. It's been well documented on this podcast how I was not a Cam Newton believer at the beginning of the season. I guess I famously asked Ross Tucker last week, does Cam Newton make the Panthers better? That's not exactly how I asked the question, but whatever. What are your thoughts going into the Super Bowl here with Cam Newton in mind?
On to Brandon's comments about Peyton. I think one thing we can learn from this postseason is never count Peyton Manning out regardless. And I really hope we realize that Peyton Manning has been in the league forever and knows what he's doing. And I think we're going into this game ready to rock and roll. And I think we're going to come out a little excited, a little overhyped. Maybe a couple personal fouls with Josh Norman or something. I don't know. I think we might be a little bit energetic. But once we settle in, I think we'll take control of the game. And I think it all starts with Cam Newton. If Cam is settled in, comfortable, ready to roll, the whole team will follow his suit. He leads this team. It's a one-headed snake kind of team. He's our leader. If Cam goes, Carolina goes. So as long as Cam's calm, ready to roll in the first quarter, and especially that first drive of the game, it kind of reminds me of the Auburn National Championship when Cam came out. He threw an interception against Oregon on the first drive. Those are the type of things that we can't let happen. We got to stay calm, stay reserved, stay within ourselves, and just keep rolling. And I think Carolina is disciplined enough, and the coaching staff knows what it takes to win the Super Bowl. There's a lot of experience on the staff. So I think Carolina's ready to roll, and as long as we stay ourselves and keep pounding, and I think we'll be able to take this game.
Now, a little bit later, I'm going to be talking with Matt Chatham to sort of break down a few of the X's and O's of this game. One of the things he's going to bring up is you never know who the crowd's going to be rooting for going into a Super Bowl. That said, my feeling, Jimmy, is that this is probably going to be a hostile crowd for you and a favorable one for Brandon, just based on geography and the fact that the Broncos are coming into this game as the underdog, and everybody loves an underdog. So are you concerned at all about the crowd and how they will cheer or not cheer for your team?
I completely agree with you 100%. I feel like as the week has been spun out, I feel like the media is trying to spin it some way that Carolina and Cam Newton were the bad guys. Peyton Manning's on his last stand. Let him win one more. And everyone's saying Cam's got all these years left in the league. Let Peyton go off on the high note. Everyone likes Peyton. Peyton can't do no wrong. And like you said, they are the underdog. So I feel like even the media perception, the fans' perception, just talking around the average Joe, who you root for the Super Bowl, everyone's saying, I want to see Peyton get one more. I want to see Peyton get one more. So I really think the world is rooting for Denver. And I think that bodes well to the mentality of Carolina, because the whole season, no one's really believed in Carolina. And that's fine by us. We'll keep doing our thing. So I think we are going into hostile territory. The game's out on the West Coast. I do think the crowd will be in favor of Denver and Peyton, especially Peyton, but I think we'll be okay with that.
Brandon, there's no doubt that the storylines that could occur after winning the Super Bowl favor that of the Denver Broncos. The storyline of the sheriff on his last stand, in his last rodeo, winning one more Super Bowl, tying his younger brother, his less achieving under brother, in Super Bowl rings. I mean, all of that definitely favors Peyton Manning. But where's the HGH story, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's interesting. I think that actually the whole media has been that Cam Newton's going to kick his ass. I mean, maybe I'm watching different things, but as far as I can tell, no one has said anything about the Broncos actually winning this game. They may have a little emotional place in their heart about it, but I haven't seen. I mean, Cam Newton's on the cover of everything. You can't turn on something about the Super Bowl. I mean, Peyton Manning has really kind of been like a pity party. At least what I've seen, no one in the media has been like legitimately saying, you know what, I think Peyton Manning is going to come out there and really have a great game, and I think they're going to win. No one has said that, at least that I've heard of. I mean, everyone's like, oh, that would be nice. But, you know, I think, you know, they're going to deal with HGH. You know, it's interesting because I was at the Fantasy Sports Trade Association in just a couple weeks ago, and, you know, Mark Cuban was there. Yeah, association dropper. That's what I do. He came out and he was like, you know, he's really against HGH being a performance enhancing drug. And there's like all this stuff out there. So it's an interesting conversation. It's kind of like the marijuana conversation. Like if marijuana is legal in Seattle and in Denver, should it be illegal for these players? And I think these are legitimate questions that people are asking, and technology's changed. But yeah, I mean, you know, he's going to have to contend with that. There are a lot of issues there. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, I think that people have really overblown this game. The over-under is at 45.5, I'm sorry. And that's insane. You know, Denver hasn't allowed more than 20 points over the last four games. And now Cam Newton rushes around, and that's one of the things that actually they give up more, you know, rushing yards to quarterbacks than a lot of other people. But, you know, still he can't, I don't think he's going to run up and down the field all 100 yards. And they've been holding people, it's insane, to 2.92 yards per carry. Now, Jonathan Stewart's been averaging 4.97, but he hasn't been playing the Denver Broncos. I think people have really overhyped this offense. And I mean, and by the way, I think you can also like Cam Newton and Peyton Manning. I'm one of those people. I like them both. I think Cam Newton's a great player. I love watching him play. I'm a big fan. If he wasn't playing the Broncos, I'd be cheering for him. So it's interesting. I think they're trying to paint things, but as far as I've been able to tell. I don't think it's working. I think people, if anything, are defending Cam Newton now, people that didn't like him before. I've always liked him, but a lot of people are coming out of the woodwork like, hey, it's not fair. You know, I mean, it's very interesting to me to see the bandwagon people. That's for sure.
Brandon, how do the Broncos beat the unbeatable Panthers?
Well, it starts with defense. You know, definitely. I think that they're going to try. They're going to try to run the ball. I think they're going to be more successful running it with Cam than they are with Jonathan Stewart. So that'll be interesting. But, you know, we need to stop them. We're number one in sacks, 52 on the year. We're going to have to get to Cam Newton, which is a little scary because you don't want him to get outside the pocket and just run all over you. But you got to do it. You got to do it. I think we're going to lean on that run game again. I hope that finally Gary Kubiak will please just give it to CJ Anderson. Why are we doing this Ronnie Hillman thing? But you know, that's how you beat the Panthers. You have to run on them. The problem is that the Panthers, when they play against inferior defenses, run up the score in the first half. So then in the second half, you have to pass. If we get in that situation, the game's pretty much over. Okay. We are going to pass the ball, but we're going to pass in the slot, which, by the way, Josh Norman has only been in the slot 2% of the season. So that's a good place to be. However, both Thomas and Sanders have 20% of their catches in the slot. So I like that. And that's just how we're going to have to move the ball, because we're not going to be, their defensive line is much better than our offensive line. There's no doubt about it. So we're going to have to make quick decisions and go down the field little chunk by little chunk by little chunk, and just make sure that we contain their offense in the first half. And then I think, you know, I think we have a good chance. I think that there's a good chance if this isn't under the 45.5 mark right now. And I think it will be. I think it'll be a very low scoring game, and I'm excited for it.
You know, it's funny. It's rare to hear a Peyton Manning team having a good chance with Peyton Manning. It's just really odd to hear. Jimmy, how are the unbeatable Panthers going to crush the Denver Broncos?
Well, I don't think we're going to crush the Denver Broncos, but I do like our chances. And I think it all starts up front. I think, especially from the defense, Denver side of the ball, I think Wade Phillips is very underrated as a defensive coordinator. I think what he has coming for Carolina is going to be their biggest test yet. I think Wade Phillips is going to do a lot of weird designs to get those blitzes. DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, they're going to get theirs, as they should. But at the same time, I think Carolina has done well all season adapting to different looks and different reads. And that's one thing that Cam's done this season particularly, is growing up as a quarterback, reading the defense as it comes and being able to adapt and change as the game goes on. So
I just want to point out, you just answered the question that I asked Ross and Matt like 5 times last week that they wouldn't answer. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for. I can do what they can do. So that's from the defensive side of ball of Denver. When it comes to the offensive side of ball for Carolina, I think as long as we stay within ourselves, don't try to do anything crazy. And Mike Shula's done great doing that. He hasn't tried to do anything out of the norm. We stayed within the game plan. Even when we've been down, even when we've been up big, we're staying within the game plan. And I do think Cam's legs are going to be key to this game. We're going to give Jonathan Stewart his. We're going to give Mike Tolbert his. But I think Cam, when coverage and those blitzes come, if Cam can pick up that 5 to 6 yards on those tough plays, that's going to make a huge difference. And just cut the chain in half. That's what we got to do, is cut the chain in half and just work slowly up the field and off to a fast start. In response to Brandon talking about their receivers in the slot, what a lot of people don't realize about Carolina is we don't play a lot of man coverage. It's a lot of zone coverage. So Josh Norman is not always lined up with that number one wide receiver that everyone thinks that, like Richard Sherman is, or other elite corners. It's mostly zone coverage. We drop those linebackers in the coverage. So I think putting those slot receivers in motion, running up the gut, they're going to be targeting right at those linebackers. Luke Kuechly's going to be ready. Thomas Davis has, I think, 11 screws in his forearm. He's ready to roll. And I think that is going to be a really key matchup, is how our linebackers and those secondary corners that we have, like Cortland Finnegan and McClain, that are not that very good, how they do covering the guys. But,
yeah, I think that Josh Norman will be left side. I don't think he's going to do man. Because how do you pick? Because Demaryius Thomas hasn't been playing as well as Emmanuel Sanders. So I think he'll be left.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think they'll be able to eliminate Josh Norman, but I don't think they're going to go Josh Norman's way very often. I agree with you completely. But it's going to be very interesting. And another guy that I think has been getting no coverage. He's just a guy that's a journeyman kind of player. Is Kirk Coleman, who's been playing safety for us. He's been outstanding back there all season. And I think last game he got 3 interceptions against Carson Palmer, and I think that's going to be another key to this game is kind of what Brandon alluded to earlier. If when Peyton Manning turns the ball over, when any quarterback turns the ball over, it's not good. And Carolina's number one in takeaways, and I expect Carolina to get 1 or 2, if not more, takeaways from Peyton Manning. They're going to be very aggressive on the ball. Peyton Manning doesn't have a strong ball. He's going to have to get it out quick, and it's going to be a real interesting matchup. I think both defenses are going to get at the quarterback. I think Carolina's going to hit Peyton several times, just as Ware and Miller are going to hit Cam. I think the turnover battle is going to be kind of the key difference of who wins this game.
You know, you mentioned the zone. If we were talking about the Peyton Manning of old and not the old Peyton Manning, Peyton eats zone for lunch and dinner and breakfast. Like, zone is what he lives on. But we're not talking about the Peyton Manning of old. We're talking about old Peyton Manning. And so things are going to be a little bit different this time around, which makes this game so intriguing on so many different levels. And I can't wait to watch it and then recap it on Sunday. Brandon, give me a prediction for a score.
2016 Broncos.
Mm-hmm. So the sheriff will ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you have me on a next fan up thing, so I can't possibly pick the Panthers. But I think it'll be that close. I think it'll be a close game. And and I want to say, you know, I love the Panthers. I've loved them all season. I was a believer from the get-go. I've been a Josh Norman fangirl since last year. So I think this is going to be a great game. I'm really excited. But I don't think either team will score over 20 points.
Interesting. All right, Jimmy, what do you got?
I'm going to take a game. I'm a little friendly gamble here. I'm going to take the over on the 45.5. I'm going to say Carolina wins 31-28, 35-28, a one score radius kind of game, but Carolina wins. I think the game starts off slow defensively. I think both teams have a hard time getting the offensive going. But as the game progresses, I think, it's the last game of the season. You can't hold anything back. So I think as the game progresses, especially third and fourth quarter, I think points will be scored. I think Peyton, you'll see old glimpses of old Peyton moving the defense around and getting the ball down the field and scoring, but then he'll flash back to his physical abilities. And I think Carolina will have some explosive plays with Cam or Ted or even Corey Brown. So I do think points are scored a lot in the second half. So I'm going to project a 35-28, 31-28 game in Carolina's favor.
I do like a 5-8 box. That would bring me much, much happiness if a 5-8 score was the final score. By the way, I'd also like a 2-0 box as well. That wouldn't be bad either. Brandon, how can people hear you, catch up with you, read you, listen to you, follow you on Twitter, all that good stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the Super Bowl, so it's interesting. But, I post all of my stuff. It's at Brandon Her FFB. That's BrandonHerFFB, as in fantasy football. You can follow our podcast, herfantasyfootball.com. You can follow us here on Blog Talk Radio. And you can Fantasy FB. And, and then throughout the year, I do tons of stuff. This last season, I worked with Bleacher Report and FanDuel and Roto World and NBC Sports, and you will see what the off season brings, but it's exciting stuff. So thank you for having me, and come hang out. Let's chat football on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. We're going to bring in the other super fans now and probably play a little bit of our Matt Chatham interview here in just a moment. But Brandon, I really appreciate you jumping in here and representing the Broncos, and Jimmy, congrats to you as you've been with us all season representing the Panthers. Thanks, guys.
Yes, sir. Thank Keep you. Pounding.
All right, guys, you can hear, Brandon not feeling all that confident about the Denver Broncos. She does pick them to win, although she admitted only because she was asked to represent the Broncos on this podcast. you can hear Jimmy feels a little bit more confident. He likes the over in this one, where Brandon liked the under. I also thought that was a little interesting. We're going to get to Matt Chatham here from Football by Football in just a minute to talk about some of the X factors you may or may not be watching for, but you should be watching for. But let's get a quick note here from Andrew. What's something that you're looking forward to watching in this game, Andrew?
Something I think is going to be really important and might even be the deciding factor in the game if you think the game is going to be close, which I don't, but Thomas Davis's wrist injury, broken arm, whatever you want to call it, the thing that separates Carolina's defense from everyone else in the league is that they have two of the best coverage linebackers in football that could go sideline to sideline and cover tight ends, cover running backs out of the backfield, and even cover some receivers in a pinch. But if Davis can't go, or if he gets it, or if he gets hurt again in the middle of the game, that changes everything, and it gives Peyton Manning's ducks a little more time to reach the receivers, as opposed to as if they would if Davis was on the field. So that's one thing I would look at. Maybe give Denver a win this game.
I would double down on that because Denver's offense was atrocious, with the exception of our really elite athletic outside linebacker and Jamie Collins being shockingly incapable of covering the tight end. So if you're going to repeat that scenario with Carolina, then that might be where the upset comes from, if one comes from there. Personally, though, I'm looking forward to seeing a potential fist fight between Cam Newton and really anybody on the Broncos defense when tensions run high.
Justin, what your team was beaten soundly by the Carolina Panthers. What are you watching in this one?
I'm going to be watching really front seven of Denver. I think they did a tremendous job, obviously, against Brady and the Patriots, some folks you may have heard of. I think Vaughn and Ware on passing downs are just incredible. I think Derek Wolfe is tremendous. A name you don't hear much about is Malik Jackson. They use him all over that defensive front, and he's honestly just fantastic in any spot they plug him. So, I'm really, really interested in how that's going to affect the Panthers. I think having Ware and Vaughn Miller screaming off the edges is going to make it tough for Cam Newton to get outside. And then I think, he's not as adept at some of the old kind of statuesque quarterbacks of just stepping up in the pocket to make space. So I think that they're going to give him a lot of trouble this game.
Yeah, so just to reiterate that point, the one loss that Carolina had this year was against Atlanta. And in that game, Cam Newton was pressured more than in any other game this year. He was pressured on 47% of his dropbacks. So if Denver could get pressure, and they have the personnel, as Justin just mentioned, like they have a ton of guys on in the front seven who could get pressure, then Denver might have a shot. And especially because coming into the year, people thought Carolina's offensive line would be a weakness, especially with Michael Ower at left tackle and a bunch of other no-names, especially on the right side. But they've held up thus far, but I don't think they've seen a front seven like Denver's yet either.
Well, and Denver has the personnel. They also have the acumen. I mean, Wade Phillips blitzes like 40% of dropbacks, except against the Patriots when he didn't need to, because he's only blitzing, I think, 20%. But, they're gonna come after him. And the football fan in me wants to see the upset. The I hate Peyton Manning fan in me just wants to see Carolina roll.
So, Greg, your team also had the pleasure of losing to the Denver Broncos this postseason. What are you watching?
Well, my take is I think Denver's chance to win this game is firmly on the shoulders of Thomas, their wide receiver, because I think he's an athletic freak. And for whatever reason this year, after he got paid, he has not been playing well at all. He drops the ball throughout the playoffs. He's been dropping the ball at an extremely high rate. And I think he could be the X factor. If he has a great game, I don't know if there's anyone, including Norman, on the Panthers defense that could match up with him just from a size speed ratio that he has. I think he really could be the difference maker in the game.
I thought you were going to say that Denver is closer to San Francisco than Carolina is, so that you're going with the Broncos.
Well, Denver did have their name written on both sides of the end zone earlier this week. So I don't know if you saw that scandal.
Listen, I did bring that up during the Superfan battle that I thought home field advantage would be in Denver's favor because of geography and the fact that they're the underdog in this game, and who doesn't love an underdog? But before we move on to taking our picks here, let's listen in on what an actual expert has to say about this game. All right, it's my pleasure now to bring in our next guest. He was a former NFL linebacker. He played for the New England Patriots and that other team in New York that's dressed in green. He is a three-time Super Bowl champion, and he is the host of the Football by Football podcast, which you can download and subscribe on iTunes or find right here on Blog Talk Radio. He is Matt Chatham. Hello, Matt.
Morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, now that your playing days are over, you can admit that the time you spent with the Jets, you felt kind of dirty, right? You knew that it was you knew that it was wrong.
Yeah, well, right? You know, I can't go there for this reason. The thing that's so weird is that the incest is real. I mean, I think the bizarre part is you go in that locker room, and I'm in there with Ty Law, Tim Dwight at the time, Larry Izzo comes in the door after me, Bobby Hamilton, all these other guys, you know, my coaches are guys that had been down there. Brian Cox was with us there. Roman Pfeiffer had been there before, Anthony Plus. I can go on all day. I mean, basically, this is the unfortunate reality of the NFL and in-division stuff. And I know, obviously, it's heated with New England and the Jets, but you can go to the situation. Look at James Harris. You know, one year he's on the Bengals, the next year he's back fighting against the Bengals as a Steeler. This is, and I know those things are tough to swallow as a fan, but this is kind of how it works.
It really is. I asked you to come on my show, one, because I'm selfish. I like getting the best insights from the guys that we have here at Blog Talk Radio about the Super Bowl. But really, you know, we're going to spend time as fans talking about, you know, the major points of the Super Bowl, the quarterbacks, the defenses. I think that's where the spotlight rightfully belongs in terms of previewing this game. We also broke that down a little bit with Ross Tucker and Matt Williamson last week on this podcast. What I'm more interested in, and where I think you can provide some great insights from your Super Bowl experience, from your playing experiences, who are the X factors on these two teams that are going to make a difference, that are going to stand out and really impact the game in a way that a lot of fans may or may not see?
Well, it's a great question. It's actually something that we try to dive into on our show. We were really looking hard. I mean, I think from my experience of the three Super Bowls, if I could go back and sort of go through press clippings, remember old interviews that I had to do, just remember what sort of the popular narratives were at the time. If you could write down a top 10 list from each of the, at least the three that I participated in, it's pretty safe estimation that maybe one or two on that list actually really had anything to do with what affected the outcome of the game. And that's, I think as a player, that's what's frustrating and sort of going through this process again, knowing that for 2 weeks time, we're going to talk about by and large things that will have nothing to do with who wins it. And then we spend the next weeks and months and maybe even the entire off seasons trying to digest what happened in the game and figure out, and I'm beating my head against the wall saying, well, we could have talked about that before, you know, and that's why I guess why we enjoy sort of trying to look for those kinds of things. So when I think X factor, I think things that I think are sort of sub narrative stuff that will actually decide it. There's so many cool little layers of this game. I mean, I like that we talk about Peyton Manning and the Omaha joke and all that kind of stuff and the way he likes to audible at the line. I think one of the oversold parts or undersold parts is the flip side of that, because the Panthers have to have a response. And Luke Kuechly is actually a guy that if you watch their side of the ball, they move in and out of stuff pretty dramatically themselves. So I think in game, you can sort of watch this as an expert and watch Manning do his thing and then find out if there's a corresponding reaction from Kuechly, because he may decide to take them out of a pressure that he thinks Peyton read. He may put them into one. He may move the front because he believes Peyton's flipped the run side or something like that. Or they can even change coverages in the event that, you know, Peyton's motion creates some new formation or something like that. But I think there's a real chess element on both sides, and in particular because Kuechly is as much of sort of a captain of what goes on there as Peyton is on his side. That'll be a really cool thing to watch. I mean, we're going to have a set of highlights, obviously, on Monday. It'll be interesting to go back and watch those. That were they the native play? Were they, was that what was originally intended, or did some choice that happened between the plays sort of help precipitate that? I think that's kind of the fun stuff in this one. One other thing that I would hit on that I think we touched on again in our show, and it was able to sort of push up some interesting conversation, because one of the big storylines, and I know you know this, Jay, and it was something I was tweeting about in game. We were discussing on Nesson right after the game, but the issues of the silent count and all the problems that the Patriots had in the AFC Championship game with DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller jumping the snap. You can go back and look at, you know, maybe this, you know, so I remember like your 6 and top 10 defensive plays that Denver made against the Patriots. That element was there on every one of them. And it was really mind-blowing to me. I've never seen something like that be so consistent throughout the game. And as a defensive edge player, that's what we studied for. It was that to have something like that hold true as a key all game is crazy. But why I think that's kind of cool heading into this next game is it'll be something in-game you can watch as a fan and try to sort of disseminate if this is still happening. Because you never really know what Super Bowl Sunday is going to be like as far as from a fan perspective, because you don't know the makeup of the crowd. I would say as an example, in some of those Super Bowls we played in, it was loud enough to where you would have to use silent count. It can work almost like a road game. I think Carolina was one example when we played in Houston where it got quite loud, where it almost felt like you were on the road at times. Last year in the Super Bowl, the Patriots against the Seahawks, it was about an 80-20 split. You know, I was there working in the stands, and it basically felt like a Seattle home game. So in those situations, the offense is forced to use the silent count. So we go into this game not knowing if the Panthers will have to go that route. And if they do, does Khalil at the center have any tips of his own? I don't think he does. He keeps his head up generally throughout the thing. But one small side story that I know I'm rambling here, but the one small side story is Newton is particularly good at throwing people with his voice. Like he's really good at the count. He has that growl you can hear through the broadcast. Ready, you know, and he has real good inflection where you see him get lots and lots of offsides calls. So it'll be interesting to see if, A, they have to use the silent count. If they don't, he gets to go to that. How jumpy does he make DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller? And is it enough so that it has to slow the rush and entirely throw us our game?
I like it. See, that's exactly the little stuff that we don't get enough of, I think, in the main narrative. That sort of thing, the snap count by Cam Newton, you know, the audibilizing by Peyton and how teams react. Now, your teams have had experience playing against Peyton. Just how difficult is it facing Peyton Manning?
Well, you know what he's trying to glean sort of from what you're doing, right? He's counting boxes. So it's really important not to stand in your coverage, stand in your front. That's something we always talked about. And you have to understand sort of when the calisthenics are real, you know, all the hand waving, all the motions, all the goofy stuff he does, when's it real and when's it not real? And a lot of that is tied into the shot clock, you know, the play clock. If you're looking at the play clock and you're sitting out at, you know, 19 and he's doing it and no one's moving, you have a general sense that what you're seeing is not real. Now, if he causes a shift where you actually see motion and people moving and there's some sort of expediency to what he's doing, you have to get set. But that said, you can't just quick and hurry over to what your responsibility is going to be, because now you're standing where he can count you. So it's important that you continue to move. You continue to stim around in disguise, because if you just stand there, you know, you're sort of painting the picture for him, then he'll do a quick audible and you know, he'll beat you with the math. But you have to disguise to make life much more difficult for him. And you also have to, as a defensive player, scout's honor, I normally didn't look at this kind of stuff, but in those games, you have to have one eyeball on the play clock to know, you know, why he's doing what he's doing and if it's about to be real.
You're known, I don't think this is insulting to say, special teams is an important part of the game, but you're known as a special teams guy. I mean, that's sort of where you made your bones. What team here might have a special teams advantage?
It's an interesting question. I would say just by virtue of Ted Ginn, and he's a guy that I did play against on the tail end of my career on the way out. I believe he was still in Miami at the time. I don't think, you know, we did look into this a little bit during the week, and it was another one of those sort of X factor kind of questions. Like, what's something that's actually going to determine this thing that we're not talking about? I mean, you can go back to Jacoby Jones with the Ravens a few years ago and, you know, how much of a backbreaker that kick return was. And I really look at Ted Ginn, who his real initial DNA in this league was as an extremely dangerous kick and punt returner. So the San Francisco weather is not going to be, this isn't San Diego, right? We're not in somewhere where the ball is going to fly necessarily. So I don't think we absolutely have to expect every kick to be a touchback. And that said, looking at Colquitt a week ago against the Patriots, he was bombing the punts. I mean, 54-yard gross and net kind of balls, where those kinds of balls can actually hurt you. It can be dangerous because if your punter kicks that well, and understanding he's obviously doing it elevation in Denver, but he does have a really great hang time ball, and you can sometimes outkick your coverage. And so we were in situations, we had great guys. Ken Walters was the strongest leg in the NFL by far. But what Ken was really good at doing is hanging it up really high. So that, you know, basically about the time he's fielding it, we're on the guy. So it really helps you with a guy like Ginn. If Colquitt kicks a monster ball, it's great. It went far. But now there's 25 to 30 yards of space between the coverage units and the guy you got to get down. And he's crazy fast. And he's elusive. And we saw that from Ginn in the reverse they ran against the Cardinals. So I think one thing as a fan, again, that you can peep in this game where maybe it doesn't come from the kickoffs because maybe it just ends up being touchbacks and the league smirks and all that for getting that play eliminated. But we still don't know if there won't be one or two or three of those that come out. But in the punt game, I really think sort of some sort of Ginn punt return because of the space between Colquitt's kick could be a real factor in the game.
One more question before I ask for a prediction. What is the Super Bowl experience like as a player? We know that NFL players tend to be creatures of habit. And we've heard, you know, both teams sort of went in the first week, the bye week, as if the game was going to occur this past Sunday. And now, of course, you have the circus that is the week before the Super Bowl. So what is that like as a player? What are these guys going through right now?
Well, I can tell you this, and this might just be, this is certainly not a broad brush for all players. This is more of a me thing. And I certainly don't want this to be taken the wrong way. I obviously wanted to win and wanted to go to the Super Bowl, but I do remember when we won, you know, 3 or 4, and it was that, the third one that we've now won the AFC Championship game. We know we're going to the Super Bowl. I do remember kind of that feeling like, oh, geez, this again. You know, it's not that I was, of course, I was elated to go get to play in the game, but I was actually like, you know, I don't want to go to a Super Bowl week. I'm just tired of that, you know? And I find that part of it a little aggravating. Some players, you know, if it's your first time, I think you get fired up for that. It's cool and it's something you've never experienced before, but we did, you know, 3 of those things in 4 years. And it's really the stuff that I'm not interested in. You know, I want to just play football and talk about football and not spend a week of in your face conversations about, you know, spaghetti versus cannellini or something. Like, it's not why we're here. But so I think part of it from the player's point of view is, can you just keep it normal, keep it real, eliminate as many of the distractions as possible. And again, the last time I went to one of these things was whatever it was, 2004. So it's been a decade more of, I think, even amping up that part of it and making the distractions that more distracting, I guess. So I think for a player, it's just really important to make sure that you don't slip up and have a week unlike all those other weeks that got you.
I'm leaning towards the narrative here that it's going to be a blowout by the Panthers. I also understand pretty much all through history when everyone is leaning one way, the opposite tends to happen. My official pick is coming up, but do you have a prediction for the Super Bowl?
Well, I'll put it this way, and we all know this just because it's football and it can happen. So either of these two teams could beat one another. I doubt that not at all. I do think that this is one of those matchups that were it to happen 10 times, when you say the Panthers would win six of them, I think that's admitting you still think it's kind of close. When you say seven, it's a pretty dominant matchup, but that, you know, could go the other way a few times out of 10. I think we really sit, in my personal view, watching a lot of both these teams, having to study them several times and write columns on both of them, coincidentally throughout the year on FBF and also for Fox. I think this borders between a 7 out of 10 and 8 out of 10 kind of thing where Carolina would win. I think we get caught up in sort of, you know, what's happened recently, and you have to put each of the things that got them there in context. The Broncos caught the Steelers with an injured quarterback, without their top wide receiver, and really what I think was the most inconsistent defense of all the teams in the tournament, AFC and NFC side. That's how they got here. They, you know, pat on the back for doing as much, but that's what got them into the AFC Championship game. And they went into the AFC Championship game against a Patriots team that played from an offensive line standpoint not unlike we'd seen them play in four of those six games leading in. So it wasn't terribly surprising that something that's unusual, but that the Patriots weren't as good of a team late in the year as they were at earlier parts. So those things in context, I think we can't really overreact to what Denver did to get there. They're still a good team. They're the best team on the AFC side of the draw, but what does that mean relative to the whole league? And I look at the Panthers, and they have kicked the shit out of two of the better teams in football. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks were peaking, looked good, had won some matchups against teams that were pretty universally respected, and, you know, they really manhandled them, at least in that first half. Cardinals looked as balanced and as good as any team in football, especially during that last month of the year. And the Panthers made it look like they shouldn't even go on the field with them. So I think those things weigh as heavily on what could happen here. I definitely lean towards blowout. I definitely lean towards the Panthers winning. Margin of the game is a little more speculative. I think, again, 7 out of 10 at least they could win in a head-to-head. I think on this particular weekend, I would expect something more than 10 points.
Matt, where can people hear you, find you, all that good stuff?
Well, for one more week, we still continue to find me on Nesson, and my Fox columns have been up throughout. Obviously, visit footballbyfootball.com, and we're going to keep podcasting here through the off season. But I know my guys are anxious as I am for a little football break. So once the season ends here, we're going to take a deep breath and relax. But once things clear out a little bit in February, we'll be back up and going 100 miles an hour.
And they can follow you on Twitter.
Yes, they're at Chatham58 on Twitter. Obviously, Football by Football has a Facebook page, and we've also got a YouTube channel, the Football by Football YouTube channel, where a lot of these GIFs and videos that we put up in our clips, we dump back into there. So there's a bunch of interesting sort of breakdown stuff, even for just this game, that's up on our YouTube account now as well.
Awesome. That's Matt Chatham, Football by Football, the podcast. I highly encourage everyone to go check him out. Thanks, Matt.
All right, Jay, take care.
All right, excellent insights there from Matt Chatham. I don't know if you're going to hear anywhere else anyone talking about Cam Newton's cadence and how that might have an effect on this game, and the fact that the crowd noise and the silent count, which was in Denver's favor 2 weeks ago against the Patriots, and what led to Von Miller having such a spectacular game against a admittedly weakened offensive line, if that will have any effect on this game as well. I think both those items are going to be things really interesting to watch for as the Super Bowl plays out. I will give you a couple of useless stats. Now we will give you our picks on this game. This is the third consecutive time the Super Bowl is featuring number one seeds, which I think is a little interesting in terms of parity in the NFL. The Panthers led the NFL with 39 takeaways, a plus 20 differential this year. I like the Panthers here to roll, and I like them to roll big time. I'm going to go with a score of 30-21 because that's another one of the squares that I own. So a 0-1 ending would be perfect for me, considering I really have no rooting interest in this game whatsoever. Greg?
Well, I want Denver to win. I think Carolina will win. I want Denver to win because I think that would force a lot of their players into retirement, like DeMarcus Ware and hopefully Tlaib and Peyton Manning. So my heart is going with Denver, but my mind's going with the Panthers.
You should know, quote unquote, the Panthers are the home team in this game.
It fits.
Noted.
Justin, who you got?
You know, I think I speak for a lot of my Seahawks fans when I say that I'm pulling for Denver in this one. And when I just sort of look at the matchups, the way things line up, and how good that Broncos defense is, give me Broncos in a lower scoring game than I think everybody's looking at. Give me Broncos 20, Panthers 17.
Patrick.
I have always liked and respected DeMarcus Ware, but I just find the rest of that team despicable. Like, I just don't like anybody there. So I can't root for the Broncos. Like, not going to do it, can't do it. So I have to root for the Panthers, I suppose, but not very passionately. I do think that the Panthers are going to roll, though, because every argument that you hear in favor of the Broncos has dependencies on, well, if this happens and that happens and that happens, and no one is talking like that about the Panthers. So they're the presumptive favorites. So I'll take the Panthers 34-12.
Andrew, hit us.
Yeah, I just think it comes down to the fact that Peyton Manning's been the worst quarterback in football this year, and he's going off against one of the best defenses in football. And as good as Denver's defense is, I don't think they'll be able to slow down Cam Newton and that offense enough to give Manning enough leeway to make the mistakes that he's going to make. So give me Carolina 34-13.
No, I don't like the 4-3 ending. The 4-3 ending doesn't work for me. 8-9 would be okay. 2-6 would be okay. And then I've got a couple other squares that I don't know the numbers yet and probably find those out on Sunday. But those numbers would all be good. 0-1, 8-9, 2-6. Anyway, that's just me. That's our Super Bowl preview, ladies and gentlemen. But now it would not be an episode of Next Fan Up if we didn't just keep this thing rolling along. We have our Superfan Postseason Awards. Greg, you are the keeper of the spreadsheet. I hand the reins off to you, my friend.
All right. Well, we did all the awards. We did the MVP, offensive player, defensive player, and so on. So going through them one by one, Cam Newton was our superfan unanimous choice for MVP. And so it's interesting that some of the fans voted in week 15 all the way up to last week. So maybe Super Bowl success did play a part in the unanimous decision. But I think he is unquestionably worthy of it. Then, thankfully, in our offensive player award, we have Antonio Brown. And it's not just because I'm the one that keeps a spreadsheet. It actually came out this way. So he edged out Cam Newton for the award. Well, so
a question about Antonio Brown, though. I mean, I've voted for Antonio Brown for offensive player of the year. But one thing that I would look at is that when Roethlisberger wasn't there, Brown didn't put up numbers. So do you think that's an indictment of Brown and that maybe Julio Jones, someone like that, should be given the award instead?
I personally don't, because I think defending my boy Antonio, he did have some game-winning plays when Roethlisberger was not in. Like, if you go back to his record-setting game, where he set the records against the Raiders, Roethlisberger was actually knocked out of that game. He actually took a 60 yards on a play down the field for the game-winning field goal. So versus Julio Jones, who did have his quarterback for all of the games this year. So I think that kind of helps out. When you have a JV quarterback like Michael Vick for three or four games, that I think that just only raises Brown up.
By the way, it should be let's look at some of the other players getting votes here besides Cam Newton. Carson Palmer received a vote from our Minnesota superfan Davey, and DeAndre Hopkins got a vote from our Tampa Bay superfan Dan.
Unanimous is what you're saying.
It was not unanimous, but I'm interested in why Carson Palmer would receive a vote in this. That seems. I would not put Carson Palmer in the conversation for offensive player of the year. DeAndre Hopkins, though, is definitely interesting to me and perhaps deserving of more votes here.
I mean, I disagree with you on the Carson Palmer front. I think he's had a great year, and I think maybe the last, it's been more of a recency bias type of thing, that the last week of the season he didn't play well in a game against Seattle, and that he didn't play well in either of the playoff games, honestly. But he carried that offense the majority of the year, and he was hitting the receivers down the field. He had his best year of his career by far, and if it wasn't for Cam, I would vote for him for MVP.
Yeah, it's certainly not an indefensible pick, right? Like, he's like, Cam's the MVP, but he doesn't stick out on that list as a homer pick.
Yeah, and there is a bit of a precedent for that. If you look back, I want to say 2012, Drew Brees won Offensive Player of the Year, but not the MVP. I forget who it was that year, but this isn't the first time that you've seen a vote happen like that. Obviously, it's just the one vote, but it is something that...
All right. Defensive Player of the Year. The votes were a little all over the place, but one guy did come out on top, Greg.
Yeah, Khalil Mack, the second-year wonder for the Raiders. He came out on top, beating out our fan favorite J.J. Watt by a single vote. And then Football Focus's Defensive Player of the Year, Aaron Donald, came in third on our ranking here. It was interesting that I think Mack maybe won this award just strictly on his play against the Denver Broncos.
I mean, I don't think it's a crazy choice to pick Mac. I mean, he's definitely up there. You said Donald won Pro Football Focus's award, and I might be a little biased, but yeah, he's definitely in the conversation too. But I'd go with Luke Kuechly just because how important he is to one of the best defenses and overall one of the best teams in the league. Just him being there all three downs, being stout and run defense, and then covering everybody on the field. I mean, we've seen the past two games, he has a pick six in each game, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has another one in the Super Bowl either.
The player in the NFL since entering the league in 2012 that leads the NFL in total tackles, Luke Kuechly.
There you go.
Offensive rookie
linebacker.
Of course, but you know,
yeah,
it's still a good useless stat there. Offensive rookie of the year, Greg.
Well, it was that man child out of Georgia. Todd Gurley ran away with the award. Amari Cooper from the Raiders came in second with like three votes, but it was mainly Todd Gurley. A couple of the other quarterbacks and whatnot got votes, but it was Gurley and Cooper.
See, now I think I voted for Cooper. And it was a long time ago, but I mean, Cooper has been, he's been a rookie number one, well-performing wide receiver all year. And Gurley, I mean, yeah, all the arrows are pointing up on Gurley, and anybody would want him on their team. But I mean, he didn't start the year, if memory serves, and he fell off at the end of it. So how is that a more dominant performance than Cooper?
I mean, Cooper fell off big time at the end of the year too. I mean, he was dropping a lot of balls. He had games where he maybe had one or two catches. The guy that I would look at who hasn't even been mentioned is Jameis Winston. He only improved as the season went on. And yeah, after the first week against Tennessee, people thought, oh, we're screaming bust already. But with a shaky offensive line, with receivers in Vincent Jackson, who couldn't stay healthy, and another one in Mike Evans, who would drop every other ball, he put up big numbers for a coach who didn't seem to know what he was doing on the offensive side of the ball, and that's why he was fired. I mean, they did hire the offensive coordinator to replace him, but it seems like, to me, Winston is the clear guy here over Gurley just because of what Patrick just mentioned. And Gurley not being healthy, and also Gurley falling off at the end of the year, and plus Cooper falling off also.
Well, and Winston he was one of like only 19 quarterbacks to make the Pro Bowl this year.
Well, good point there. First of all, Greg, great use of the pun running away with the award in terms of Todd Gurley. Second, famous Jameis did receive votes. And then Justin, just to get you involved here, your arch rival, arch nemesis, Charlie, who represents the San Francisco 49ers, threw in a vote for Tyler Lockett. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know,
I didn't want to throw that out there because I didn't want to come across as a homer, but you know, he's had such a tremendous year. The one thing that would sort of keep me from really, really pushing him as a vote is his production as an offensive player was good, not great. It was his production as a special teams player that made him a great rookie, but this isn't all around rookie of the year. This is offensive rookie of the year. So kind of for that reason, as much as I love Tyler Lockett and he was such a steal, even moving up to get him in round three, his offensive contribution specifically lagged behind that of Gurley, Cooper, and Winston.
You know, I think it's more probable than not, Justin, that you've got a good place here on Next Fan Up with that kind of analysis. Defensive rookie of the year, Greg.
Well, I think this is crazy. This is not unanimous. Marcus Peters wins it from the Chiefs, the cornerback who I think was tied for the league lead in interceptions. And I think it was just bitterness that the three guys dissented and did not vote for him also. And Patrick, since you were one of the guys that did not vote for him and you picked Leonard Williams, make your case.
I'll make my case against Peters in that he got picked on all year. So, yeah, he had a lot of picks because a lot of guys were thrown his way. He actually, and again, like I'll show my Patriots bias, he reminded me of Asante Samuel in that way. That's not a bad thing. I would love to have kept Asante Samuel. I think it was a huge mistake that we let him go. But, you know, the dude's a gambler, and he jumps routes and he gets interceptions because of it, and that's good. I'm not taking that away from him. That's certainly part of his playing style. But the guy gave up a lot of big plays.
So the thing about Marcus Peters, and, you know, he came up through UW here, so I know him pretty well, is to me he's a lot like Patrick Peterson in that people see some spectacular plays, see him with a lot of interceptions, but he also gets torched. And at least in the case of early in the year, he got torched a lot, actually. This to me is one of those situations where it's all sizzle, no steak. I mean, if you just look at his highlight tape, he looks like one of the best football players out there. But if you actually look what he does on a game-per-game basis, I don't see how you make him Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, and it's also an interesting dichotomy that we're Patrick taking Leonard Williams, and I would take Leonard Williams too because, yeah, you mentioned that if you watch the highlight film, Peters jumps out, he makes a ton of plays, and if you look at Leonard Williams, you're not going to see many plays. I mean, he only had 4 sacks on the year. But Williams was one of the best run defenders in football all year. He did get a lot of pressure from his 3-4 defensive end slot, which is generally not a position where you're going to get pressure from. But just to go back to Peters gave up 939 receiving yards, the third most of any cornerback in the league this year, and also allowed the second most touchdowns of any corner in the league with 8. So, yeah, he did make plays, but he gave up a ton of plays too. And you mentioned Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson, one of the best corners in the league, but when Peterson first got into the league, he was very similar in that way and that he was giving up a ton of plays. But Peterson ended up taking less gambles and picking his spots, and now he's one of the best corners in the league. I don't know if Peters is going to be able to do that, but he's going to have to try because at a certain point, it's going to come to the surface that he's just giving up a ton of plays, and that rookie year sabbatical or that rookie year mulligan is going to run out.
And going back to Leonard Williams, he reminds me of, and again, Patriots, he reminds me of Richard Seymour in that he was a high draft pick. He's going to play for a long time, presumably, and he's going to go to a lot of Pro Bowls, and he's not going to have the stats to support it. And people are going to be like, why does this guy keep going to the Pro Bowl? And it's going to be because every player that plays against him and every coach that does the film against him is going to say he's shutting down that side of the line, just like Richard Seymour did. And you can see a lot of parallels there where you're going to be looking at like a truly great player in the scheme that doesn't necessarily reward his talents with stats.
So what you're saying, Patrick, is that Leonard Williams is going to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, yeah, right after Richard Seymour gets in.
And now I feel like I'm compelled to bring up my old Football Today compadres, Ross Tucker and M-Dub, making fun of me for saying that Richard Seymour is overrated. And I still feel that way. Just so
wait, you know.
You
feel that Richard Seymour's overrated?
Yeah, Richard Seymour's overrated. That's a whole nother podcast.
Well, they should make fun of you for that. Well, no, massive tangent. We should go into that, but okay.
No, we should not. Because Coach of the Year, I think, is an interesting discussion. There were a lot of votes for a lot of different guys. Ultimately, Ron Rivera won out here, Greg.
Yeah, Riverboat Ron came out on top. And second and third place go to Andy Reid and Bruce Arians, which trailed by like less than half the votes that Ron Rivera had. So we pretty much rewarded the 15-1 season that Rivera was able to orchestrate there.
I think that makes the most sense in Ron Rivera winning here, but I definitely think the guys that did receive votes, with the exception of maybe one of them, were deserving of the conversation. Bruce Arians, of course, the guy who won it the last couple of years, and Andy Reid, I think, did a great job there getting his team fired up down the stretch. Go ahead, Andrew.
I mean, I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but Todd Bowles did go 10-6 this year with a team that went 4-12 the previous year. So, I mean, yeah, if they were 10-6 and made the playoffs, I think a lot of people would be talking about him as a Coach of the Year candidate. And he did the same job that he would have done if he made the playoffs. So I think he deserves consideration. But, yeah, I think Rivera is the choice just based off the fact that they went 15-1 and that they were the best team all year.
You know what all those other coaches have that Todd Bowles doesn't have? A former first overall pick at quarterback.
Yeah, so that should only further Todd Bowles' case. I mean, in my opinion, he did it with smoke and mirrors with Fitzpatrick and a bunch of no names on the offensive line. So I don't know. They somehow went 10-6 with personnel that maybe shouldn't have went 10-6.
I really want to throw some love at Andy Reid. I mean, after five games, you know, when they were, I think, like 0-5 or like 1-4 or something, and losing Jamaal Charles, like that was screaming implosion right there. Like the whole franchise was going to burn to the ground. And like, I mean, it takes real leadership to keep that together and to go on this tremendous win streak, win a playoff game. To me, that's one of the most impressive bits of coaching I've seen in recent memory.
Except for that playoff game against the Patriots. That was a horrible bit of coaching.
Well, regular season awards, right?
Fair enough.
Speaking of the Patriots, Charlie, the San Francisco 49ers fan, voted for Bill Belichick. I don't know of a head coach by that name in the NFL. By the way, if you're going to vote for the guy, you can't take a shot at him at the same time. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And then Mike Zimmer, Davey decided to vote for his head coach in Minnesota. Was the other to receive a vote. Yeah, I don't believe that Mike belongs in the conversation.
Another bastion of integrity there in Davey.
We talked about perhaps mentioning something about the Pro Bowl, but I think we're out of time here, guys. What should we talk about the Pro Bowl? I mean, this is the most useless thing the NFL does, I think, is the
Pro Bowl. I feel everybody is contractually obligated to discuss the Pro Bowl, and that is the only reason anybody does.
I don't think that's the case. I think that's the case. All right. So I just want to give a big thanks to Matt Williamson, who joined us here through the playoffs. You're going to want to check out his new podcast, Dynasty Blueprint. Right now it's available on Blog Talk Radio. It should be available on iTunes very soon. And of course it'll be available on Google Play. If you have Android phones, Google Play is getting ready to launch their podcasts here before the month ends. So you can get podcasts that way now as well. I want to send a thank you to Ross Tucker, who was kind enough to join us. And we had the Football Today reunion show. If you missed that, you can check out our iTunes feed, Next Fan Up. Or also go to blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup to listen to that. It was a lot of fun. And if you like people bashing me, that's pretty much what they did. They tagged up and they bashed me pretty much for 40 straight minutes, which was kind of nice. I want to send thank you to everyone who joined us on Next Fan Up this season. We'll have a recap show coming up on Sunday. Sitka will be leading that show, and I will be on the show as well, probably from my car outside on the street, so that I don't wake up my household while I'm trying to perform a podcast. But that'll be a good show. And then we'll be taking a week off as we get ready to prepare you for the off season and the upcoming NFL draft. Any last words here, gentlemen? Anybody have anything they want to add here?
I think it's been determined that I am the smartest guy on the podcast today, because one, I voted for Marcus Peters, and two, I didn't have some crazy statement that Jay said earlier. So
interesting. Do we have time to get into whether or not the NFL is actually recording PSIs during football games?
Oh, hell no.
That's a whole other podcast.
You don't want to do that?
No.
All right, well, put me on that one. I want a platform to yell at people.
That'll be in March. I'm sure, March. Patrick. Well, that's when the appeal gets heard, and that's when it'll get thrown out of court, hopefully, for being stupid. But I'm again editorializing. Justin, thanks for joining us on today's show. I'll give you the forum to say something here.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Thanks for inviting me. Any Hawks fans, if you want to keep up on the team, facebook.com/group/homeof12. Other than that, you can always reach me through the podcast if you want to talk to me directly.
Awesome. And Andrew, go ahead, take a shot at us. I know you got one fired and ready to go for Patrick.
Nah, I mean, it's just been building up. I've been building up this anger for about, I don't know, 25 years. So I'm just going to keep letting it fester until one day when the Jets actually give me a reason to actually talk some crap, then it'll really come out.
No, dude, you won that game in 2010.
Don't start.
Okay.
All right, everybody, enjoy the Super Bowl Sunday night. We'll be back on Sunday night to recap that game. As always, follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. You can email us nextfanup@gmail.com. Hope you enjoyed this season. And as I always do, because it's one of my favorite drops of all time, it's Jeff Fisher dropping us this bit of knowledge.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.